the internets, the interwebs, whatever they call them. By the way, your host there, myself, Jeff, and
Tom.
Special guest host, Tom, affectionately known as Tomrad in the Boston Left, or parts of it. So anyway, we are, again, Social Alternative Radio, and we're here to give you not just alternative sources of information, radical news, whatever that might be, that sort of thing. We are also here, we're here to talk about things that the corporate media doesn't want to talk about or talk about in depth or from an angle that the corporate media won't touch. But we're also here to organize. We are here to promote partisanly, if that's a word. Is that even a word? Partisanly? We're here to, you're good at grammar. Is that a word?
I think it should be.
Partisanly push socialism, democratic socialism. We're here to tell you about rallies and ask you to, you know, get away from the electronic screens and get out and talk to people. You know, I've been reading this recent, like, you know, psychological studies, you know, how they get reported on a lot in the corporate media and so on and the alternative media. And somebody was doing this shtick on NPR saying that, you know, basically no matter what you do, I forget the context, so it's a kind of a bad anecdote, but no matter what you do, it's the personal contact that matters. Oh, yeah, I remember what it was. So, okay, professor from blah, blah, who knows where, some infamous bourgeois institution, maybe even Harvard, boo, was saying something about social media, right? And keeping friends. There's a British guy, but he's studying in America. Anyway, so this was just yesterday on National Propaganda Radio. I forget the show or whatever. So this British guy studies this stuff, right? He himself is not on Facebook, by the way. But anyway, he studies it with his colleagues, and they come up with a few predictions that were correct when Facebook first got going. And it was that it would increase your contacts on through Facebook or through the internet. And your friends, quote unquote, they rightly predicted there'd be like a limit, not just the limit Facebook sets, but a real limit in terms of interaction of around 100, 150. And that's apparently panned out, that as far as like people that you're really going to talk to a lot on Facebook, it's like 100. You know, that's the most people can handle, 100, 150. But then they were talking about efficacy of communication and attitudes towards friends, quote unquote, on Facebook. And they found, to cut to the chase, they basically found that your real circle of friends is probably around 5. That means people you feel you can count on totally in a crisis and that actually live near you so they can act on that. And that the basic idea of how to most effectively communicate with those people, not both in terms of polling data, but also in terms of things that apparently they studied, had to be face-to-face. In other words, a conversation on Facebook did not equal a conversation face-to-face. So the professor said, well, that's very labor-intensive to have these face-to-face conversations with all your real friends and people you want to be real friends. And friendships in formation, they found that face-to-face discussion led to that more than Facebook discussion. And, you know, all this is subjective, obviously, but you know, the whole trend is, boom, face-to-face discussion is still the most important thing, human contact. And I like that because it reinforces what I've discovered empirically in organizing, whether it's union organizing or organizing for socialism or both. It takes that discussion. I always tell people, like, I'm helping to organize with quite young people, sometimes in high school, sometimes college, sometimes just in their 20s, workers, you know. And they're really into, like, looking at the screens, man. They're really into it. Even during a meeting, they're, of course, doing their thing. They don't think there's anything wrong with texting when someone's speaking, for example. And I, by the way, don't blame these professors in academia, however noxious they might be in many ways. I don't blame them when they ban, you know, Facebook, or when they ban, like, electronic things in their classroom. Because otherwise, the students are just going to be like, yeah, I'm really listening, but I'm really doing texting my friends, you know. So anyway, the point is, I try to say, look, organizing is still labor intensive. Personal time must go into FaceTime. I don't use those terms when I'm talking to them because they sound stupid to me, but I'm using them on the radio for some reason. FaceTime, personal discussion with people. I say it's labor intensive. I do use that term. You have to have discussions with people. That's what works best for organizing, for educating, once someone is involved, etc. So I don't know if that's probably your experience too,
well,
I would imagine, right?
You made me think of what happens when you actually do get into face-to-face discussions of 100 people. or 150
Oh, like
people.
A public meeting speech?
A public meeting.
Oh, okay. That's a whole different animal. Yeah,
where you have to have some kind of method to make that be effective and to actually build something.
Well, you know what? Public meetings, as long as we're going to do a digression here, let's go all the way. Public meetings are an interesting animal. I've spoken a lot of public meetings, a lot of union meetings, and you never can predict how they're going to go because a lot of it does depend on the crowd. If you have people that are overtly hostile and meant to disrupt your meeting, they can do that pretty easily. And they can, and if you're not, especially if you're not careful, you know, on the left, it's the famous Spartacus, the Sparts. You know, they will. Right. This is a weird little group that you that they don't exist in many places, thank goodness. And I'm not running. I haven't run into them in 10 years personally, but they did back when I was doing most of my organizing in Boston, and they did have some people in Boston, which was a long time ago. They could they just had it down to a science how to disrupt a meeting. They would get up and say something that sounded left wing, sounded socialist, and direct everything as an attack at the speaker, but also direct it somehow that the audience should be involved in this esoteric discussion that all of a sudden means nothing compared to what you're supposed to be talking about.
Well, it's also the not just hijacking the meeting, but it's parasitic because you're a parasite on somebody else's efforts to build that meeting.
Yes and no. Yes, the way they do it, but they're doing it usually in times where we've opened up, have an open mic or have open discussion, which, you know, we take, you well, know, what, we being social alternative, we make sure we
what
do
I
that.
Mean is that somebody else is doing all the grunt work to build, build to get people interested to come to a public space and do something
and
other than
destroying
what they were
it.
Planning, and then they're destroying
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a method to their madness, and I mean madness literally. The method to their madness is if they can destroy someone else's meeting, they will go for the most sort of inexperienced yet disgruntled people in the audience. Like, oh yeah, that's not fair. What they said is true. It's not fair the way they're doing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And of course, that person is just probably has no experience and doesn't know what they're talking about. And then that's exactly who they want. And they go after that person. Anyway, a slight digression there. But basically, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. We are talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. And as we try to explain, we're here not just for alternative information, but we're here also for getting involved with socialism, getting involved with organizing, getting involved with socialist alternative, getting involved in a union drive, getting involved in the walkouts that are coming. Let's just segue into that. You know, if you haven't heard, January 20th, Trump gets inaugurated. This is the naked face of capitalism. You know, usually they like to hide it a little bit. That's why I'm enjoying so much, in a way. I mean, Trump is horrific, and people are afraid, and they should be, although not afraid to the point of paralysis or victimization, self-victimization. People should be angry, more angry than afraid at Trump. But anyway, people are rightly afraid of what Trump and the government is going to feel unleashed to do with Trump at the helm. Always remember two things, though. It's not just Trump. Even the parts of the ruling class that didn't like Trump, I think a lot of them are making the following calculation. Gee, let's see how far we can get away with this. Let's have a plan B, but let's see how far we can go. He's putting our own people. He's putting the frickin', you know, ex-head of ExxonMobil in the cabinet. Usually they try to hide that stuff a little bit. And that's why I started to say I'm enjoying the people that are complaining that Trump's cabinet is so nakedly capitalist that they're not divesting their money. Trump himself is not divesting his money and putting in a blind trust and all that. That's just horrific. How could they do that? Which, you know, from a liberal point of view, is genuine indignation, because liberals are satisfied if the business person supposedly has their money tied up in a blind trust or whatever. That's good enough for a liberal. For a socialist, that's a joke. That's a blind trust. You're still going to be rich. Look how rich the Clintons got out of their time in office. It's just typical. You become president, you have a ticket to ride, of course. You know, you have a credit card, like a Harvard graduate almost. A credit card of the ruling class. Whether you use it or not, we'll see. But with presidents, boom. Oh, yeah, you're taken care of for life. There's no argument about that. So, it's not okay for socialists if you just have a blind trust, but it's funny to see the liberals like, really, how dare you be so nakedly greedy and obviously greedy? We got to hide that stuff because the peasants, the workers, might get a little upset. That's what happens in the back of their mind, you know? And yeah, I'm upset. I mean, there's a certain section of the population that's very upset. It should be a lot bigger. You know, I feel sorry for working people. Not because they didn't. I don't feel sorry for working people that voted for Trump. I understand the dynamics of the duopoly, the two-party system. But I understand that I feel sorry for the people that voted for Trump with illusions, with actual genuine illusions in Trump. You know, like I can't feel sorry. I don't agree, of course, with someone that voted for Trump as sort of a FU vote. You know, screw you. You know, a protest vote that unfortunately is locked into the two-party system. Ping pong, Democrats, Republicans, Democrats. That's the ping pong. And I love ping pong in real life, but I hate the political ping pong of the duopoly, of the corporate duopoly. That's a sad fact that until we have an alternative political party, which we're working to organize, by the way, we're gonna be stuck with that. There's gonna be a certain so-called protest vote. I don't agree with it. I don't think it's valid, but you can see the thinking. The thinking I really have trouble with, and I do understand this to a certain extent, is someone with illusions in Trump. Oh, I'm a working person, so I'm gonna give my life over to the machinations of other these billionaires and their allies and other billionaires and other millionaires. But then, of course, we do understand that we're educated to think that the corporate media tells you that in various ways. There's no left, mass left in this country, no obvious political alternative, and Americans are so isolated in terms of internationalism. Like, if you're in Europe, say you're in a country where some right-wing government takes power, well, you know, at least in your country, you had socialist parties, communist parties, labor parties, left-wing parties, and if they are suddenly gone or really reduced, like in a country like Poland, well, look over the border, and in some other country, they're still there. You know, so you have the history, plus you have the fact on the ground in other countries nearby. Here in the U.S., where they don't even report on Mexico, you know, or Canada, where there are alternative political parties to the two conservative and liberal parties, you know, they don't even have we don't even have knowledge of that, most working people. So, I guess I understand, not agree with. You know, so this Trump thing. That's, of course, what a lot of socialists are talking about, what a lot of the analysis is in our paper, Socialist Alternative. We talk about what led to that severe mistake and misunderstanding. Again, not promoting Clinton at all. That's part of the equation. People voted for Trump because of Clinton to a certain extent. You've got two corporate candidates. A corporate candidate is going to win. Sorry, Tom, go ahead. You wanted to say something?
No, I just wanted to say that there are people, many people out there who are in a state of panic and despair and feel that the sky has fallen and feel that there is no hope for the future. And I feel like that's the flip side of the coin, that everything is okay as long as you hide the reality.
I also feel it's self-indulgent. I feel like, you know, who can... I felt like on Facebook for a while, I think it's dissipating a bit, but like I have, like a lot of people, a lot of Facebook so-called friends, right? And including people that are only friends with me because of, you know, political discourse, basically. And including some that are very new to politics, but they feel like they know what they're talking about. Sorry if that sounds bad. I don't mean it to be. So this fear thing was like huge. And I tried to say some very reasoned arguments. Didn't feel like I was getting very far. Then I tried to say things like, well, it's better to be angry than, like I said earlier, better to be angry than fearful. I do understand the fear. Better to be angry than fearful. And of course, identity politics plays a huge role in what I'm about to say, which was sort of the zeitgeist of the moment, might still be, who is the most afraid wins the prize. And then who is the most afraid based on their personal identity? You know, like say you're a Muslim immigrant, trans, you know, activist, right? Just to put the identity politics pieces together, you're probably going to win the prize. You're really afraid of Trump. Perfectly understandable. You should be. I'm afraid of Trump. A lot of people are afraid of Trump. You should be even more afraid of Trump in a lot of ways. But you should still be more angry at Trump. Don't wallow in the victimization. Don't wallow in the fear. It's not going to help. Because the same people that were saying, I'm just afraid, I'm just afraid, I'm just afraid, they weren't saying, oh, but I'm going to go do this, I'm going to go do that, I'm going to, you know, boom. That wasn't happening. I don't know. I just don't see, maybe it's just anecdotal, I just don't see as much, I'm afraid and I'm not going to do anything. I see a little bit more, let's do something, let's protest, you know. And leading up to January 20th, at first, it seemed like Socialist Alternative was one of the only groups really organizing for that. That plus International Action Center, which was doing the Washington protest against Trump. But a lot of groups locally and nationally, they didn't seem to be doing anything. Now I'm noticing more anti-Trump things popping up. I don't have a comprehensive list for today's show, but we do have protests initiated by Socialist Alternative we can talk about. And I think that if you want more information, if you get in touch with Socialist Alternative, we could provide that. Go to socialistalternative.org on the net. Go to Socialist Alternative on Facebook. You got to be careful there. I think there's more than one Socialist Alternative there on Facebook. So make sure you get the right one.
There's a Socialist there's one in Australia. Alternative in Australia.
Anyway, let's stick locally for the moment. Let's start nationally. Of course, you know, on January 20th in Washington, D.C., there's a protest. I don't know how big it's going to be, but it's there against Trump being inaugurated during the inauguration. That's good. Go to that if you can. But a lot of people are doing the strategy, which I agree with also, of staying local with the protests. It's whatever works best. Where I organize, do a lot of organizing now, people don't have a lot of money, even just to jump on the bus. So they are going to do local stuff. Then January 21st, there's in Washington also, the Women's March. Initially called the Million Women's March. Now I'm just hearing like March for Women or Women's March. And that's, I hope, really going to be large. I think it's going to be a couple hundred thousand, maybe at least. That's the estimate I've heard. And that's in Washington, D.C., buses going from different areas. And there's also local components to that, but not as extensive as the inauguration ones, as far as I can tell. So that one might be the one to go to D.C. And you can do both. Like, we have people in Worcester that are going to be going from our rally, which I'll get into in a minute, which starts at 4 p.m., and they're going to then jump on a bus at 10 p.m., go to Washington. Yeah, this is, well, they're, a lot of them are young. Go to Washington.
They have their youth.
And protest, yeah. Well, I used to do that. I used to take a lot of buses to protest in Washington when it wasn't as popular. And you have this horrible, horrible bus ride. I have to be honest with everyone. It's worth it, though. You got to sacrifice for this stuff. I mean, it's not, well, I mean, we're not Maoists, but Mao said revolution is no dinner party. And I don't like Mao or Maoism, but that was true. And so anyway, I think it was him that said it. Maybe it was someone else. Anyway, so basically you get on this
bus.
Joe
and Lai.
Really? Okay.
I think so.
You're probably right. You get on this bus at like a Boston Common, let's say. And it's one of these like rented, you know, buses. The diesel thing is in overdrive, unfortunately. Like, and you're going down the boringest route ever devised, I-95, where every rest stop, at least in Connecticut, is a McDonald's and nothing else. And I don't know about you, but McDonald's food makes me sick. And it has ever since I was in my 20s. It just makes me ill. I like Burger King. I eat Burger King to this day. Something about McDonald's, like slapping meat on every last thing, which is what they do. Just makes me ill. So anyway, you have nothing to eat that's any good. You try to sleep. It's really hard. I couldn't even do it now because like I snore now. Back in my 20s, I didn't snore, you know. But it's like, sleeping is really hard. And nothing to eat. And then you get there, of course, early in the morning, way before the rally starts. What do you do for the next 5 hours?
Go to the Lincoln Memorial.
Well, we used to just organize. We used to go around and sell newspapers, Socialist Alternative or Justice, you know, it was called then. Set up our, you know, information tables and stuff. You can find stuff to do, but it's like, wow, you're there, you know. And then you leave late usually if you're organizing, if you're doing, you know, selling newspapers or doing an information table. So you end up leaving late. But you got to catch the bus. So sometimes the bus leaves from like another place and you got to like travel from point A to point B in a city you're not familiar with. I'm not that familiar with DC. By the way, I like DC every time I've been there. I mean, I can see the horrible inequality in that city and the horrible racism, backing up the capitalist inequality. But still it's like the city where there's like, it seems like a lot of stuff to do, you know? I mean, I have done a little touristy stuff there with the museums and stuff. But anyway, that's another digression. So anyway, you come back and you're dead tired. And the next day, you can't sleep on the bus on the way back. You get back really early again. And your whole next day is kind of like trying to recover. But it's worth it. And in fact, what are you going to be doing on Sunday? The rallies are on Friday and Saturday. So you got Sunday to recover. You know, it's worth it. It's worth it. But locally, what's happening is Boston Socialist Alternative is doing a rally. I believe it starts at 5 maybe, and I should know this, I just don't have it in front of me.
Five's a good time.
Go to Boston Social Alternative on Facebook. But I think it's 5 p.m. In Boston Common. And there probably will be student walkouts during the day. And I think everyone's going to try to make it down to the Common. And then in also you can go to Socialist Students, a website, nationwide website. They'll give information about all the different rallies and stuff. In Worcester, there's hopefully going to be student walkouts at 12:45 p.m. converging on City Hall. And then everyone is going to converge, students and workers, hopefully at 4 p.m. and till about 6 at City Hall in Worcester.
In Lowell, it's at 6 p.m. at Lowell City Hall.
Great. And Rhode Island, it's at Rhode Island City Hall. And again, the exact time is eluding me, which drives me crazy. I just saw it on Facebook, but I didn't print it out. Let's say around 5 p.m. again in Rhode Island. Again, check all these by going to socialalternative.org, go to Social Students, go to the web pages for the areas I just mentioned, like Rhode Island, Social Alternative Rhode Island, or Rhode Island Social Alternative. But the point is, resist Trump. Student walkouts, worker rallies all around the country, some initiated by Socialist Alternative, some initiated by others. We've got some general demands we're putting forward. Make Worcester a sanctuary city, for example. This is the Worcester one. No deportations of immigrants. Black Lives Matter. Unite against hate crimes. Defend women and workers' rights. Also, $50 an hour minimum wage and right to unionize. Trump is going after everyone. He's going to go after immigrants. He's going to go after Muslims. He's going to go after people of color. He's going to go after working people in general. Going to go after women. Having rallies that demands that correspond to a lot of this probable and already started attacks on working people is very important. And because part of what we're saying in Social Alternative is that we can defend against Trump. There's been other examples of right-wingers that get elected, right-wing pops get elected that have been successfully resisted and defeated. But we also can make gains, even as Trump and his administration start their attacks, even when they're doing those attacks. We can make gains. We can force them back. Look at what's already happened in Microcosm. They wanted to get rid of that ethics committee.
That's
right.
And
they backed off right away. On the whole Obamacare thing, which is very problematic because Obamacare isn't really good. There's aspects of it that are okay, but most of it's bad. It's basically corporate welfare. And so, therefore, it's hard to mobilize people around Obamacare. Democrats don't understand that, Democratic leaders. And yet you see the Republicans hemming and hawing about how they're going to get rid of it. We're going to keep some of it, not keep some of it, you know. Now, that's a whole discussion that we're not going to waste time today on, because I think the corporate media is actually doing that to a certain extent, is, trying to read the tea leaves. There's a lot of, you can see the corporate media is very, very upset. They're not on the inside with Trump. So they're like... trying to read the tea leaves about what's Trump going to do and the Republicans, what exactly are they going to do about Obamacare. So far, apparently they've done a series of votes in Congress that looks like they're just going to get rid of it with nothing to replace it. But they keep saying they're going to have something to replace it. Now, whether they dump it or replace it, we have to actually, this is, it puts socialists, I think, in an opposition of defending Obamacare for the moment, but at the same time saying we need, and here's the slogan we're using, improved Medicare for all, which I really like.
I do too.
I like it better than single payer. Single payer has always bugged me. I've said it a million times. I will loyally, as a socialist and left winger, go to, and I've done this, speak in front of a crowd and say, we need single payer health care. And the back of my mind is like, what the hell is single payer? That's just such an abstract term. You know, it means, and this is, I don't even understand it fully, to be honest. It means you have one insurance that everyone is a part of. Right? Now, what's wrong with that is that it can still be, like in some countries it is, still a private insurance company, but heavily regulated, right? Or it can be a government-run insurance company mimicking the market through it, the way it runs the insurance company. That's not good enough. Britain has national health care. That's what we need. National health care. National health service. Socialized medicine. We need something very, very clear. So I find the Medicare thing also abstract in its own way. Most people don't know what Medicare is. But improved Medicare for all, That's much better than single payer. Go ahead, sorry. Do you have that same like problem with single payer, or do you understand it like boom?
Well, I think I understand it pretty well the way you just mentioned it. But what you brought up, the National Health Service in Britain, which was fought for by socialists.
Oh yeah,
and has been the pride of basically Britain. Ever since, is now under severe attack by the Tories, who have been trying to privatize it and turn it into the free-for-all that Trump wants.
Yeah, that's a good point. In fact, when we compare, this is a really good point for everything we talk about out here, almost. We often compare the lack of decent social services, including health care and education, et cetera, in the United States, with countries that, even under capitalism, have achieved a better system. Like Britain, national health care, or free education in other countries. We mean that in a qualified, very sort of, comparison? That's not quite the right word. We mean that in a qualified way, because we are comparing...
Critical.
Critical, yes, very good. Critical, but also, what's that word? It begins with an R, not referendum,
relative.
But relative. Very relative way. Excuse me for...
I'm going to be on the show out. To provide words.
You're just
to Jeff.
You're just a thesaurus at this point, apparently. So for my aging brain, it's very relative promotion we're doing here. Because as you just said, Tom, perfectly correctly, the national healthcare system has been under attack, severe attack, for decades in Britain. They've tried everything. See, they're afraid to say, like, you won't find even a conservative British politician for the most part. Like 99% of them will not say. And I, Tony Blair, or whoever, I know he's supposedly Labour, but he's really conservative. I, Tony Blair, or I, who's the conservative guy that just resigned? David Campbell? Is that his name?
Cameron.
David Cameron? All right. I, David Cameron, am against the National Health Service. That also, by the way, won't happen up in Canada. You won't find a Canadian politician of even the most conservative ilk get up and say, I'm against our national health program. They won't say it. They're afraid, because even conservatives like it. Even conservatives in this country will defend Social Security, you know, which they should understand. Hey, wait a minute. That's a little bit, tiny bit like socialism there, conservative, and you should connect the dots. But anyway, so they're afraid to do an outright attack. But what does that mean? What do they do instead in Britain and in Canada? They cut funding. They cut funding as much as they can to get people pissed off. They create a private health system that the rich have access to and say that will be the case for everyone. Of course it won't be. You know, but they say that they lie all the time for their greed. They see a whole new market that can be reopened, like in the United States, of ripping people off around healthcare. You know,
another area was public transportation with the trains in England, which were nationalized for a while and then
a long time
denationalized under the right wingers, and now they're trying to make them even. They're trying to bust the unions of the train drivers.
And it's been a disaster. So there's a whole campaign. I think even Corbyn, who's way too cautious on stuff, even Corbyn, who is known as a left-winger, sort of, in the British Labour Party. I mean, not sort of. He is known as a left-winger. He is, I believe, behind the renationalization of the rail system. I know, of course, socialist alternative sister party in Britain, the Socialist Party, is for that. And the Committee for Works International, which Social Alternative is in political solidarity with, is for that in Britain. So I think there's real... But also, let's think about Britain for a second. They have... I don't know if you know this. You probably know this, Tom, but I don't know if our listeners know this. They have huge, huge traffic jams in Britain. They have traffic jams that make New Yorkers weep. I mean, it's just, like, horrible. Because the public transportation system has been so degraded. That's the primary reason. There are other reasons, but that's the primary factor in that. So in Britain, where you have a lot of people that can't afford a car, even if they got one... let me retrace that. There's a lot of people that can afford a car, but there's a tradition of public transportation. And buying a car means you're going to be in these horrible, traffic jams. They're caught between a rock and a hard place. The rock of the increased expense of owning a car, which is a little more than here, and then the, including gas and everything, and then the public transportation, which you kind of in the back of your mind think you can rely on, but then when you actually try to use it, it's not that great. I know someone living in London who had a two-hour... They're within London. They had a two-hour commute to their job because the parts that you couldn't take the subway for... The subway's jam-packed. I hate the London... By the way, I hate the London subway. It's really horrible because it's too small and too jam-packed all the time. So you take a combination of subway and bus or just buses, and you end up like the subway cars are too jam-packed and the buses are too infrequent, or they're caught in the same traffic that everyone else is, you know? So it's, anyway, the point was, when we talk about things being better in other countries that are still under the yoke of capitalism, as we'll call it, the yoke, that's an old-fashioned term, the collar of capitalism, they still, we're speaking very relevant, and we know that it's changing, we know it's getting worse. In fact, we have a whole pamphlet. The Swedish section of the Committee for Works International published a pamphlet in English just to tell the rest of the world that speaks English, or the parts of the world that does, hey, look, Sweden is not what you think it is. It's not a socialist country. It's not the third way between capital and socialism. And it's just a capitalist country where for a short time, the labor movement and the left got strong enough to force the capitalists to make major concessions within a geopolitical context of staving off, so-called from the capitalists, staving off Stalinism and so on. So there was this I won't go into it right now, but there's this, these things that conflated together to create the conditions for Scandinavia as a whole to really make gains in social welfare programs that are the envy of the horribly unequal, and lack of a left-wing movement and big left-wing movement and left-wing party, United States. So United States that never got off the ground, and we can talk about why that is. We've talked about it on other shows. Without that party that's not a Democratic Party, Republican Party, but that, in terms of neoliberal and pro-capitalist, without that party for working people like the other countries have had, you don't get that level of social welfare even under capitalism. But at the same time, they're taking it back. So in Sweden, you have neo-Nazis running around. You've got attacks on immigrants. You've got the lower level of unionization than they had. They were up to like 90% unionization. It's lower than that now. You have even in Norway, that was riding the wave of the North Sea oil, they're cutting back. By the way, in Norway, they just got rid of FM radio. Did you read about that?
I didn't.
They got rid of FM radio, idiots. They want to go digital. They want to go digital. And, they're screwing people over, basically. It was supposed to be a cost savings thing. It's bull. But anyway, that's that. Don't focus on the FM radio thing. Focus on, they're actually cutting social programs in Norway to the point where people are actually protesting in Norway. That's, maybe the richest country in the world in terms of inequality levels, less inequality, But still, because it's capitalist, all that stuff is temporary. You're in trouble if you're in a capitalist country. You can't rely on anything. The next day, they could take it away, And that's the process happening in a lot of countries that we mention here in passing. Wow, they have almost free healthcare. Well, they have subsidized childcare or very cheap childcare. The United States has no childcare program. What is it? You have that one that's connected to schools, but hardly anyone qualifies for it. You have to be really, really poor to qualify for it. Childcare, connected to schools. Full of holes, full of, regulations that most people can't qualify for it. Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to go back to the United States and quote-unquote single payer, because in polls continually, a majority of people polled, when it is explained that it would be enhanced Medicare for all, they are in favor of it. And on the other hand, people who voted for Trump and who swallowed the Kool-Aid that Obamacare was the worst thing that has ever happened to their chances to have a healthy life, they're the ones, many of those voters are the ones who benefited directly because of provisions in Obamacare, you couldn't be insured if you had a pre-existing condition, like a life-threatening illness. And under Obamacare, of course, you did get that insurance. It wasn't...
Yeah, but the problem is the insurance comes from a private corporation.
That's right.
That can then say, we don't like this market anymore. We're not making enough money. See you later. And you lose that particular company's health insurance.
But my point
is... No, I know what your point is. It's different. I'm just throwing in a qualifier. So, and then you also have the fact that once you're in these private insurance schemes, they can jack up, as they have been, the costs tremendously. And then once you're in them also, like Michael Moore's Sicko. Remember Sicko was all about people that already had insurance? but who, except for the pre-existing thing, were screwed out of their care. There's so many little rules and stuff that people routinely get screwed out of care. But I know you're making a different point. You were saying that
my point
that
is
they should know better, the people that were...
Something that's going to now hurt them terribly.
Right.
Is happening right in front of our eyes.
Yes, yeah. And there's people that I think are waking up to that fact.
But I think that the reason...
But you have to be organized, too, not just woke up to it.
When you mention that the Republicans who control are hemming and hawing about it, it's because they're being made aware, not consistently. That goes back to the importance of the demonstrations and the protests and the resistance, is to make them aware that the political cost for them doing what they're doing right now is high.
Well, Matt, higher. And let's make this very concrete. If you're out there, and no matter how you voted or didn't vote, and you're pissed off about losing aspects of Obamacare, as you should be, even though overall it's a really horrible plan. But if you're pissed off about losing what Tom just described, some insurance company can't reject you out of hand because of pre-existing condition. If you like the 26-year, of course you should, and you like the insurance being covered till you're 26 under your parents' plan, that was good. I think there was one other thing that was pretty good, too. The rest of it is crap. And not only crap, it's regressive. It takes steps backwards into cementing the relationship between profit mongering and healthcare. As long as you cement the relationship between profit and market and healthcare, these things should never go together. Healthcare is a human right. Yes, it is. Some libertarian got on a Facebook page I was on and said, it's not a human right. And man, that was it. I just flamed the crap out of them. I have no patience for that. Let's see if it's not a human right when you're on your deathbed or your mother's dying. Let's walk into the room, libertarian, me and the libertarian, right? And say, gee, mom, you don't have quite enough money for the procedure you need to save you, to prolong your life. So we're going to turn the plug. We're going to shut the plug off right now. Libertarian? Is that okay? Should we shut the plug off on your mom? Now, if the libertarian says yes, I immediately kill him. I just strangle him to death because he's obviously a sociopath. No, I don't kill him. I'm just kidding. But we obviously put him in prison because he's a sociopath. If he says no, then I say, then you've just lost your libertarian card. Congratulations. And I'll give him a hug, you know, and mom will continue to live. That's, you know, there's nothing stupider and more evil than capitalism when you get down to the philosophy of it, the actual, you know, the money equals life or not. And we all have our anecdotes we could start about. I know someone that was killed off. You know, that's another thing I tried to say to my wife because she's a little younger than me. And I said, look, you get to a certain age and they consider you collateral damage or something. They consider you, it's okay if you die now. It's kind of respectable. You're in that age range where if you die, no one will kind of really, they'll say, oh, that's kind of young, but they won't really be upset. Whereas someone dies in their 30s or 20s and they spend a little more time looking into it, maybe. That's another little horrible, horrible thing under capitalism and the whole insurance thing. There are people in insurance companies that are sitting there with actuarial tables and algorithms talking about this in cold-blooded profit margins about people. Oh, this person's such and such an age, and they're probably going to die of this and this, and we don't care. We just want to make money off it. Boom. Sorry, what do you say, Tom?
Well, I think what comes to mind is this new term that I see, normalization.
Yeah, normalization of Trump. No, never. We're not going to normalize this guy. Oh, he's our president, and we elected him. Well, look at the stats. Nobody elected. No, you didn't elect him. You didn't elect him. He lost the popular vote, and so many other people didn't vote, and so many people can't vote. And screw it. He got almost no votes when you add him. When you really get down to it. No. And what does our president mean? I'm a socialist. I'm not wedded to this bourgeois, you know, the way the government's set up. It was set up by slave owners and emerging capitalists. You know, there's many other ways to structure a government where there's no president, but you would have a elected people in a group, you know, making important decisions that you need to make. And if you don't like them, you recall them, you know. anyway, back to the, if you don't like what's happening with the healthcare, if you don't like what's happening with a lot of things, get out and protest on Friday, January 20th, next Friday, right?
Look Jeff, around I your wanted city. To ask you what you thought about...
sorry.
What you thought about people should be have in mind for after the protests.
Ah, great question. Let me just go over the protests one more time. We know that in Boston, protests at Boston Common at, what, 5 p.m.? I wish we had the exact time. I think that might be it. Go to Boston Socialist Alternative in its various forms to find out more, like on Facebook or go to socialalternative.org nationally. In Worcester, like I mentioned, 12:45 p.m. student walkout. Go to City Hall at 12:45 p.m. So walk out before that. If you're a high school student, want to do so. College students as well. Rally for students and workers, 4 p.m. in Worcester City Hall. For more information, go to socialiststudents.org for all these different cities, Worcester and so on. Providence, Rhode Island, or Rhode Island as a whole, come and protest at City Hall in Providence at, I think, again, around 5 p.m. And Lowell is, well, I'll let you say that one, Tom. I don't remember that one.
Lowell is at 6 p.m. at City Hall.
Yeah, in Lowell, Mass. And these, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot of other protests out there. Go to socialiststudents.org for more information. Go to socialalternative.org. Follow the links to get more information. There is, like we said, the Washington protest organized by the International Action Center and others. And that's, I don't know what time that's happening in Washington, D.C., because it will happen. It would coincide with the time of the inauguration during the day at some point. Right? It's not during the night, is it? The Trump, the triumphal Trumpism crowning of the fool? Because that's not...
Are you talking
the
about
court the court jester has taken
ball and the...
No, I'm talking about like the actual, like the keys to the nuclear thing and all that. Is that at noon or something? I don't know. January 20th, yes. Protest in Washington. January 21st, protest for women's rights. Trump's going to attack women's rights. Everything from birth control to... the right to an abortion, et cetera, et cetera. Protest. They're going to cut funding for Planned Parenthood. They already have a lot of it. Protest this. Protest for women's rights, January 21st, Saturday, both in Washington again and in your local cities, some local cities. I know that in Providence and Boston, I think they're having rallies. I'm not so sure about Worcester, which is unfortunate. Worcester should have one too. We can't organize everything, but we'll try to get that off the ground too. And you mentioned the good, interesting point about what after J20. Well, I think what needs to happen is anyone involved in these protests from a progressive or socialist or left-wing perspective or just progressive, even liberal or whatever, should try to stick together in a general coalition, sort of a united front manner. All the groups, you know, do their thing, but also come together for key defensive actions against any attacks by Trump. Like, say if Trump starts a Muslim registry or something, boom. If the right-wingers in your city or your area get emboldened by Trump or more emboldened by Trump's actions and they start to attack people, boom, have a defensive rally for that. But also in a proactive way, get the ideas, like, for example, in Worcester, make Worcester a sanctuary city to stop deportations, et cetera. If the police are emboldened, because the police love Trump, a lot of the police organizations, if they get to do their thing, have a, you know, rally, Black Lives Matter type rally with a coalition of anti-Trump people as well, and stop that and reform the police, get the police under community control as much as possible in a given area. So basically I'm saying a coalition on a united front manner to both defend and attack during the Trump administration in a given city.
What do you mean by united front?
Oh, united front would just be that we don't assume this will be a liberal coalition. This might turn into a radical socialist coalition. It might turn into progressives that don't like the Democratic Party, thank goodness, you know, or something like that. And they don't want to confine everything to the Democratic Party. And it does, and it won't rely on the Democratic Party, you know. Although the Democratic Party members, of course, are welcome to be a part of it. But United Front means that every group can maintain its own identity, put out its own ideas and stuff, but come together around certain common issues that we agree on, like defend against hate crimes, defend against harassment of immigrants or whatever, make Worcester a sanctuary city, use the Worcester example. If we all agree on that, boom, we act in together on that at a certain rally or action or something.
And we should also keep in the front burner that Trump is and his appointees are going to attack the environment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could spend a whole show going through, I mean, they're going to attack everything. They're going to just like, and those things are already under attack. See, that's the thing that's interesting. We're going to get into that in a minute if we have time. We're going to talk about Obama. Obama's legacy is being discussed in the corporate media. We thought we'd give you a socialist perspective on that and other perspectives on that as well. What's happening with the environment is that the Obama administration had a really bad record on the environment, despite some last minute things that were kind of trumpeted no pun intended, by the more mainstream environmental groups, you know, like Obama. What did he do right before he, in the last couple months, he walled off some more land and some water, conservation areas. Now, that's good. The problem is it went against all his not supporting the anti-pipeline struggle, having pipelines blossoming around the country, unfortunately, with the frack thing, not being against fracking.
TPP.
Supporting Trans-Pacific Pipeline. That stood for something else, sorry. But, just the whole record of the Obama administration, threatening to open up drilling rights in the Atlantic and in the Arctic, backing off when there was pressure. But just bringing that up, pushing it, testing the waters, that was really bad. And then just the whole bailout to the big car companies and everything else. I mean, it's all related to fossil fuel production. Not challenging that in any real way, not doing a massive public works program around green technology and so on, the way the Green Party was putting forward in the election. Obama didn't touch that with a 10-foot pole of the Obama administration. Again, we're not personalizing it against Obama. Like a lot of liberals, including people I know pretty well, they're like, they're putting stuff on Facebook about, how nice and the Obamas are. They're just nice people. And, this is like ABC of Marxism, is that it's, individuals acting in the context of mass political, socioeconomic forces. So if you're nice, really, then you're not going to last long, number one. And I pretty much think Obama's lasted way too long to be considered nice in that system. He's done a lot of bad things. I mean, look at the drone warfare, for example. We'll get into that again soon. But whether they're nice or not, like say there's this moment where they're nice, or there's certain things that are personalized that are nice, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the policies that they have supported or even generated and then supported. So it's not a question of who's nice and who isn't. So in Worcester, for example, that coalition thing we're talking about, the United Front thing, we're trying to get off the ground. ATTAC, ATAC, Anti-Trump Action Coalition. An injury to one is an injury to all. I'll just read from the sign-up sheet we're using. A Trump presidency will threaten many in Worcester, and it is our responsibility as members of this community to organize and defend our city. We cannot rely on the establishment to fight for us, and we cannot wait for the attacks to happen. Every successful struggle can build momentum for our movement, so we must be prepared to stand up, fight back, and win. ATTAC is an initiative started by Worcester Socialist Alternative with the goal of having a network of Worcester area activists who can help resist any attacks made by the Trump administration against workers, immigrants, women, and other threatened communities. We are workers, students, and activists organized to defend those who are under attack and to win victories for our neighborhoods. We actually are immigrants as well. Sign up if you are interested in keeping up with what we do, or even help us organize a protest meeting or action. Make Worcester a sanctuary city. No deportations of immigrants, Black Lives Matter, United Against Hate Crimes, Defend Women and Workers' Rights, and then people can sign up for that. And we have gotten a certain level of signatures and so on. Whether they, whether that turns into a coalition, we'll see. Just looking at the back of our we have this sort of all-purpose leaflet in Worcester for both the student walkouts and the worker rally. Here's a couple of facts. Worcester is home to 8 public high schools, 13 colleges and universities. Students number more than 7,026 high schoolers and more than 36,000 college students in a city of 181,045 people. I like that, how specific that is, 45. It's 46. Someone just moved in. Oh, no, it's 44. Someone moved out. Someone got evicted. Let's take that power into the streets with a citywide walkout to protest Trump on Inauguration Day. We need to build resistance against Trump. The Committee for Workers International, Socialist Alternative, and Social Students joined others in calling for an international and U.S. Day of Action on Inauguration Day. And by the way, you wanted to mention, we were talking off air, about the international aspect of this.
That's right. Well, I know that there are demonstrations. I've seen this on Facebook, and I've seen it, mostly on Facebook, but Facebook is a good way if you use it in a political way. If you just want to tell people what you had for lunch and show them a picture of that, that can be your way of being, using Facebook. But I use it, and many people use it politically to get the word out. Demonstrations are going to be happening all over the world against Trump and against what Trump represents. So the world is watching.
I don't know for sure, but it seemed like Committee for Workers International, which again is a an organization of socialist groups and parties around the world in about 50 countries. And Socialist Alternative here in the U.S., we are in political solidarity with the Committee for Works International. I don't know. It seemed like to me that we initiated that idea of international protest against Trump. I'm not sure about that. And I'd like to be wrong about it. I hope a lot of people thought of it. But it seemed to me like we initiated, the CWI initiated that international protest against Trump. Now, what form would that take in other countries would be to go to U.S. embassies or whatever, maybe Bank of America or something, and protest. But I like that international aspect to it, because a lot of the policies, of course, Trump is going to do is going to hurt people internationally. And that's one of the contradictions of capitalism, is there's no way not to hurt. The everyday function of capitalism hurts workers and hurts countries, hurts groups of workers in other countries. For example, Trump is playing fast and loose with putting tariffs on foreign goods. He's claiming he's going to do that in a big way. That remains to be seen. I bet he actually won't ultimately, but he'll target certain things. The minute you put a tariff on something coming in, the other country can put a tariff and you have a big trade war. And that's been a history of capitalism. It happens all that's happening right now. The idea that the U.S. has no tariff barriers to certain things coming in the country is false. There are right now tariffs set up on certain goods and services. So this, the globalization adherence, the liberals that it's funny, the liberals that think they're progressive, they're extolling the virtues of globalization against Trump. They're taking a very regressive, reactionary position, actually, because that's globalization on the terms of the capitalists, of course. That's capitalist globalization, which means it's there to chase the cheapest labor, the cheapest natural resources, and then turn that around and dump cheap goods to make profits off, in a situation where the competitors cost them more. It's a fight to race to the bottom, basically. On the other hand, if you say you're against globalization under capitalism, which we are, of course, but I mean, if you say it as a capitalist, then they say, oh, wait, you're a protectionist. You're for like Trump is doing, you're for slapping trade barriers up. And that actually does hurt working people as well. Both do. Capitalism hurts working people in general. There's no way out. There's no coherent way out. It might seem like, if you just judge by the post-war upswing and just judge by Europe and the United States, that capitalism delivered the goods, that most people were doing well. And then, well, I can understand that illusion, but you look a little deeper and you see that things are constantly changing. That the minute a certain, like we were saying earlier, the minute a certain lifestyle is achieved, even for white workers in an advanced capitalist country, that's chipped away immediately. It never reached everybody either. So like the height of the post-war upswing, say in the early 60s in the United States, you had people writing things about how horrible poverty was in the United States in the inner cities, and which soon, of course, showed that very graphically with rioting and so on, or in Appalachia or other places. So it's capitalism at its best is bad. It's not good. It's capitalism at its best is worse than socialism. And capitalism at its worst, you know, when they bring in fascism, when the economy's tanking and all that, is just, it threatens the survival of the planet for human habitation, at least. Don't mean to go to extremes there, but it's the truth.
I think people need to realize why these attacks keep coming and why they are so intensified.
Well, part because of the contradiction we just talked about. They've got no way out themselves. The capitalists are fighting each other and using us as part of that fight. Trump doesn't give a crap about working people. He just wants to make profits. But if he can use trade barriers that he thinks will help him and other capitalists that he wants to help with those trade barriers, he'll use right-wing populism, use the workers, say, oh, this trade barrier will help save jobs. And it's a complete lie, or it works for a year or something, for a certain section of workers, and then boom, oh, it's gone. The trade barrier is gone. Or they've put another trade barrier up that's eliminated the effectiveness of it. You know what I mean? There's no way out under capitalism. No way for there to be socially responsible. I know you know this. I'm just riffing off of what you said. Socially progressive capitalism, even though at times there's growth, and that growth trickles down, they say, a little bit. I have a job. Maybe I can hold on to my house. Maybe not. The job is so rotten. I mean, there was that shocking statistic a few weeks ago where almost every single job, that's the extent of it. It's like almost every single job created under the Obama administration was a lower paying job. Think about that for a second. Whoa, phew. And I know I'm feeling that, boom. Losing ground. Everybody's losing ground. Even people that will defend the system, that will vote for Trump, and all that, they're losing ground. They're objectively, no matter how screwed up their ideas are, they're losing ground. Capitalism is not really working for them in terms of, like, what do you do about children now with a high cost of college? What do you do? The people can't afford that much money. They just can't, you know? And then when that becomes generalized, which it already is becoming generalized, people are going to protest despite really reactionary ideas in their heads. They're going to say, well, a lot of them are going to say, well, my kid at least needs some money to go to school. Well, I got to do something about that. Where do I go? Again, where you go immediately, let's think of another plug for Inauguration Day. January 20th, there's going to be a lot of people out around the country, in your area hopefully too, protesting against a lot of the things we're talking about, the high cost of education and so on, but mostly protesting because Trump's going to make everything worse. Trump's going to take a bad situation and make it worse, and consciously so, you know, and doing it with relish, not even hiding it. Not that hiding it makes it any better. That's where we differ with the liberals, you know. Liberals are like, oh, Obama was pretty nice. No. Obama's all for privatization of education. Did you know that, liberal? Listen, liberal, did you know Obama and Hillary and all the other Democratic icons now are for privatization of education through charter schools? They agree completely with the Republicans on this issue. Did you know that? Sorry, I'm done yelling at the liberals. Go ahead, Tom.
I think also that one of the great benefits of getting out there and attending a demonstration is that you don't feel isolated afterwards. You realize that there are many other people out there, people who you have a lot in common with and who have a lot in common with you, and that you're going to see different shades of that. You're going to see different shades of opinion and what's the best way forward. And I hope that it won't just end up being one particular voice. I think that people feel they don't have a voice, and that's one of the reasons that they were bamboozled by Trump, some of them.
Well, I think the whole purpose of the corporate media right now, and a lot of the Democratic Party, is to normalize and legitimize Trump. As weird as that sounds, because they don't like him, I think that's a lot of them are falling in line behind that idea that must happen for the system. And that's nothing new. The Democratic Party is always more loyal to the capitalist system than it is to any sort of political, ground gained for working people, you know, or the illusion of such. So Al Gore, when the election is clearly, you know, taken from him in illegal ways, his and the Democratic Party's answer to that is to go along with it to keep the system intact without too much blood, so to speak. I mean that metaphorically, to keep it intact for the investors. Investors, the big capitalists, they want stability. Trump is a chess piece for them. Gore is a chess piece for them. Trump is also a capitalist, but he's not one of the more powerful ones. And so, you know, they want a board where they can predict the outcome of the game really easily. And that's why a lot of them are getting behind Trump that didn't like him before. They gave money to Hillary, but once Trump maneuvered himself, not himself, by himself, but once Trump was maneuvered into power by the wing of the capitalist class that does like him, then they had to accommodate and they had to, you know, draw some conclusions. And their conclusions, I think, based on the stock market, is that, hey, we're going to make a lot of money off Trump. We'll see how far he can go. The working class is very weak. The unions are very weak. They're not going to fight. Maybe Trump will make a lot of money off us, you know? Now, they get to the point where every ruling class gets overconfident. They misjudge, they misread the situation. And I know there are some ruling class people. There was a famous example of it. I think it was Warren Buffett or somebody like that that made a speech about a year or two ago about the pitchforks are being sharpened. You know, watch out, trying to warn his own class, you're going too far. But that goes unheeded in the moment because not just the greed factor, but the factor of how capitalism works makes the machinations of the system always, it's an uncontrolled anarchic system. It's unplanned. It's always going for short-term maximization of profit, more and more profit. Where do you invest where you get the most profit? Not in terms of if that's too much, because it creates this contradiction. One of the contradictions of capitalism tends to be for the rate of profit to fall. Some of that is about capitalists accumulating so much capital, they can't find profitable places to invest it in. So they see their rate of profit falling. And they look around and try to find ways to increase that. And that's where a lot of privatization schemes come in. They're basically re-chewing the old chewed up ground, you know,